Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, April 12th, 2016. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. Patrick Ryan is with me today. Hey, Patrick, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. How are you today?
Doing great. We've got a full lineup today. Wow. We're going to be talking about several things, but the first thing that we want to chat through is an announcement that was made about 2.5 weeks ago with Attorney General Brad Schimmel. On Thursday, March 24th, the Attorney General announced to the ambulance community, law enforcement, fire departments, public health, and so on, that his office recently negotiated a $6 rebate with Amphastar. They are the manufacturer of naloxone or Narcan, and it is to benefit those that are treating patients with a heroin overdose. And as we know, that is of epidemic proportions. Not only in Wisconsin, but also nationwide. Patrick, I know you were at the Attorney General's announcement since it was at your location in Madison at Ryan Brothers Ambulance. What are some thoughts that you'd like to share with our group this morning regarding that announcement by the Attorney General?
Well, thanks, Joe. Yeah, we had a tremendous outpouring of interest from the local media here. I kind of expected if we got two or three outlets to come and hear what we had to say, I would have been happy. And I think we must have had about 25 people there, including all of the local affiliates. We had Wisconsin Public Radio, the Wisconsin Radio Network. So I think it really underscored for me the real importance in the public epidemic that we're really seeing that you referred to. And so it's really a topic that's on everyone's mind and hits probably more than there should be of people that have a connection with the problems that we're seeing now. So, it's the whole idea of the rebate came forward from Ohio and New York. We received word that they had struck similar deals in their states to help offset the increasing costs. And I think really what it comes down to is, and this kind of came out as we further discussed it that day, was, really when you look at especially rural systems who are already under significant budget constraints, to have a drug, increase in usage, maybe three or four times from what they're used to, and then in addition to that, having the price triple, that really is a significant hit. I would think that most of the larger systems, are able to, for the most part, absorb that. But it does, it does have an impact. But really, on that rural, low volume type setting, I think it really comes to be a key component to helping them make some tough financial choices a little bit easier to handle, and should pay dividends for many of those types of services, especially.
Well, our appreciation also to our government relations person and lobbyist, Michael Brozak, who met with the Attorney General and his staff, to include Special Assistant Johnny Coromanos. So we appreciate Michael's work as well as Johnny's as well. And we are having ongoing conversations with them as the rebate continues to roll out. For those that are interested in this and would like to look at it in more detail, we do have it posted on the PAW website. We refer you to the website at paaw.us. Look under the Resources tab along the top row. And then once you click on that, you'll see the Narcan rebate information in detail. Now, to be eligible for the rebate, you need to submit your purchase history on the state-approved rebate form, and that needs to happen within 60 days of the end of the quarter, and the rebate is good until February 1 of 2017. So very good news for the Wisconsin ambulance industry, a means of controlling its costs, and of course, helping the citizens in its community where it's required, where an overdose has taken place. And this will hopefully help everybody manage those requirements. Patrick, anything else on this before we move on? Patrick, anything else before we move on?
Excuse me, Joe.
That's okay.
I just think it's just another great example of Paul being able to contribute to something that benefits all of EMS throughout the whole state. And we're always going to continue to look for ways to be innovative and to bring different resources to the state to really, you know, help the whole system.
Absolutely. And if anybody has any questions, you can surely contact the association directly at 414-236-4192, however we can assist you with that. Our topic today regards STEMI, and we have several guests on hold that we'll look forward to bringing into the conversation here shortly. Recently, the PAW Board of Directors met, and STEMI drugs was part of the conversation, and we thought we would continue that and expand it by having some people who obviously work in that area. We'll be introducing very shortly Dr. Mark Rosenberg. He's Medical Director for Cardiovascular Services at Holy Family Memorial Hospital in Manitowoc. We're also pleased to be joined by Jay Stewart, who's EMS Director at Valder's Ambulance, and Dana Seckler, EMS Chief at Baraboo District Ambulance. Today's program will run about another 25 minutes. It is sponsored by Cardiotronics, Savic Buying Group, and AledTech. You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. We'll be back after these brief messages.
Frustrated with EMS equipment breakdowns? Is equipment sitting on the shelf waiting to get repaired only to be left with an unreliable backup, having to chase down or wait for a repair technician? If so, there's a simple fix. Cardiotronics is a single-source service maintenance provider dedicated to EMS equipment. They service several Wisconsin customers already. Besides repairing your equipment, they'll create a formalized maintenance program. They have three main objectives: reduce costs, improve reliability of your equipment, and minimize service events. Contact Craig Harmon at Cardiotronics today at 855-433-3427 or find them on the web at cardiotronicshealth.com. Make Cardiotronics your next service call.
Since 1997, Savic Buying Group has been saving members money through world-class buying power in the public safety sector. Hello, this is Savic Executive Director Mickey Schulte. With over 4,500 Savic members throughout North America and strong commitments from our vendor partners, we turn this buying power into products and services at the industry's best prices with agreements from Henry Schein, Zoll Medical, Granger, and many other companies. To receive more information or get started today, contact the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin at 414-236-4192 and mention you would like to be a Savic member, or go online to paw.us/Savic, S-A-V-V-I-K. Best of all, PAW pays your annual Savic member fee so you can access millions of products discounted and get real savings absolutely free. Make the call, 414-236-4192, and join Savic today.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad, or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Patrick Ryan. Also pleased to bring into our conversation Dr. Mark Rosenberg, Jay Stewart, and Dana Seckler. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Joe.
Hey, terrific to have you all with us. We'd like to get into the conversation regarding STEMI, and more specifically STEMI drugs that are at the orders of a cardiologist or standing orders with your local ambulance service as part of your protocols. This was a part of a conversation that we had at a recent PAW Board of Directors meeting. Jay, why don't I turn things over to you? You can kind of frame this up for us. I know Dana and Dr. Rosenberg have some information to share also. But why don't you go ahead and start us off, Jay?
Sure. I know we were discussing at the last board meeting some of the pre-hospital drugs that our different services are giving, and we had expressed that for my service, we have switched away from Plavix and went exclusively with Brilinta. And then it was interesting to hear around the table some of the different things that everybody has to deal with. Like Dave, for example, can give Brilinta for some places, has to give Plavix for others. And then I think he also said for some places they can't give anything. So it's interesting how the different hospital systems affect what's happening in pre-hospital. We've had really good luck with Brilinta. I know Dr. Michael Rosenberg is behind Brilinta exclusively, and he was a big push on getting it in our area so that every hospital recognizes it, and all our Green Bay hospitals that we transport to also recognize Brilinta and are for us giving it pre-hospital. And then I know that we also had ended up with a discussion on transporting to the closest interventional cath lab and not really regarding hospital affiliation and truly doing what's best for patients. I know Holy Family has been a big push on that, and I think Dana and Patrick Ryan also share the same, and really all the Paul Board members kind of agreed on that, that it's patient first and worry about politics and business later. So I guess I'll leave it at that, and everybody else can kind of start chiming in with their own ideas.
Jay and Joe, if I could interject, Mike Rosenberg here. You know, this initiative began in November of 2012 when the National American Heart Association decided to revamp their Mission Lifeline process and change the program from door-to-balloon to first medical contact balloon. Eastern Wisconsin was fortunate enough to be chosen as a pilot site, and I was fortunate enough to be chosen as the co-chair. And we tried to get buy-in. It was a struggle initially. There were lots of hospitals, I think upwards of 40, that participated in one way or the other. And as Jay had indicated, there's politics, there's finance, there's kind of the perspective of some cardiologists that they want to see it, prove it. You know, I'm from Missouri, show me. So they're not going to activate in the field. And some hospitals still do not activate from the field. But what we arrived at after hammering this out for about 2 years was, number one, field activation. So as Jay has pointed out, we encourage our EMS crews in a non-pejorative way to activate from the field. We know that there are going to be some false activations. That happens nationally about 15% of the time, and we are good with that. I don't think that EMS staff do any worse a job than the emergency room physicians that I've worked with. Sometimes they do better. The other thing that we talked about, which was somewhat contentious originally, was the issue of oral antiplatelet agents in the field. We feel very strongly about that. And as time has gone by from 2012 till now, 2016, the evidence has only grown. There were lots of hospitals that were resistant. Number one, they didn't want to give any oral antiplatelet agent because of the small chance that a patient would require surgery and the surgeons would object because of excess bleeding. A valid concern, but that occurs in only one of 1,000 STEMI patients that they go to surgery that hospital stay. That's national numbers. So that argument seems weak, although the surgeons still push that, it doesn't seem a strong argument. The issue of which agent to give, I will tell you to cut to the chase that Brilinta has been stated by the FDA. First of all, the new guidelines, the new ACC/AHA guidelines for STEMI care and non-STEMI care, which were republished a week and a half ago, state conclusively that Brilinta is a class 1A indication and Plavix is a class 1B indication. So for the first time, the FDA made a formal statement of drug superiority. They've never done that with any drug, an antihypertensive, an anti-neoplastic cancer drug, an antibiotic. They've never made a statement of superiority. This is the first time in history that they have gone out on a limb and said, we have a superior drug here. It should be used for acute MI. So it seems to me incontrovertible, and now most hospitals have moved in that direction, but there was a lot of resistance early on, some of it political, some perhaps well-founded. And the benefit that I wanted to share with you is the burden in acute MI is clot, and clot is our enemy because sometimes even if we open the artery, we have to fight the resurging clot repeatedly, and that may take much time away from reestablishing good blood flow. People are treated with an agent that's potent, and Brilinta, for instance, inactivates 85% of platelets within an hour or 2 hours. By the time the patient's on our table getting the intervention, some of that clot is being affected or impacted by the Brilinta. And our use of glycoprotein 2B3A intravenous inhibitors has dropped like a stone. So whereas we used to use that in probably 80 or 90% of acute STEMIs, we now do not. Integral and ReaPro, Agristat, we hardly use that at all any longer, probably in 10% of STEMIs, maybe 15. So again, I want, for full disclosure, I do some research with AstraZeneca, and I'm not paid by them, but I'm an advocate for this, but only because I really believe strongly in it.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Rosenberg. I appreciate your comments on that. Dana, I know you also have some experience with this, obviously being in Baraboo with the ambulance service there. What are some things that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, our situation is a little different, and that's kind of what we had shared at the board meeting, which created the, let's put this on the radio show. Our people that we transport to our local hospital in Baraboo, if it's truly a STEMI, are going to get shipped out to typically one of three hospitals down in Madison. They could actually go up to La Crosse. And then we deal with another hospital system that actually transports down to Dubuque, Iowa. So we're dealing with various hospitals at the end of, you know, whatever the STEMI call would be. And what we were experiencing was, depending on the cardiologist who was on call that day, they had completely different orders. And that was going to, you know, that was obviously causing some room for discussion on, well, what do we do? And some of the cardiologists, one, you know, absolute proponents of Brilinta, and that's, you know, that's what they wanted given during the transfer from the hospital down to the cath lab. But then I'm going to say, and this is at the time, this is about a 50% half wanted Brilinta, the other half wanted Plavix. And so, you know, that's when you look at the cost of these medications, it's a huge cost for ambulance services to be putting them on all the rigs to be ready just in case. So we actually proactively approached the local hospital and the pharmacist and said, hey, is there, you know, what's on the national news? Where are they leaning towards one or the other? And I do believe that there's a movement towards one versus the other, but we're still in the day-to-day operations. It's still about 50-50 of which drugs that we do give. So we talked to the pharmacist and saying, could you guys maybe develop a kit so that, you know, when the patient comes in, diagnosed with STEMI, you're going to find out who their cardiologist is, you know, bring that kit up so that when the patient's ready for transport, you just hand that kit to a paramedic and it will have whichever medications you want given during the transport from our facility here in Baraboo to whichever hospital they're going to. So they're in agreement that that seemed like a good idea. We're still in process of trying to figure out the legalities and the practical application of how it's going to work. But I will say our pharmacist was very proactive in working with us in creating kits, and half the kits will have Brilinta and the other half will have Plavix until something's decided where there seems to be a better consensus amongst the cardiologists.
If I can interrupt Mike Rosenberg again, I certainly understand and am sympathetic to the quandary that you're in. It is difficult for you folks to be held at the mercy of individual cardiologists, bad enough to be held at the mercy of individual hospital systems. As Jay can certainly validate, different hospital systems have different styles. What we have done is we've made a policy decision. We have four interventional cardiologists, and we've made a policy decision that care is uniform amongst the four. So there won't be any deviation, and there won't be any backbiting or criticism thereafter. We have a kit, which Jay and his colleagues, because our partners in EMS have made us the success that I think we are, and I'll mention that in a minute. We have a little kit that contains pre-hospital tools, from everything from the electric razor to shave the groin, to defib pads that are compatible with our system, electrodes that are compatible with our system, and of course, we stock them with Brilinta. There's a gown that's compatible with our system. So everything is packaged in a little canvas bag that is replenished whenever they bring a patient in. So it's all understood that this activation is done in the field. Now let me just, I'm going to make a little advertisement for us, and we couldn't be doing this without our EMS partners. Our door-to-balloon times for the last 9 months range from 11 to 20 minutes. Our lowest is 11, our highest is 20. And I can't tell you on first medical contact to balloon, but for the most part, we are well under 90 minutes, and some of our transports are from quite some distance. As a consequence, we have won a number of national awards, so I'm going to brag a little bit. We've won the Gold Mission Lifeline Award, Gold Plus, for a receiving hospital, and we've won the American College of Cardiology's Action Registry Award in the Platinum category, which is only awarded to 50 hospitals nationwide. So that's for quality and time. We can't do that without our EMS partners, but it's these kinds of protocols that have helped make this true. So I would just invite, if anybody is interested in learning what we have done, we actually were the keynote address at the American College of Healthcare Executives 2 weeks ago, which is the National Hospital Administrators meeting. We gave the keynote address, and we had such subscription that we had to give it twice, actually, because it was oversubscribed. I'm happy to share that information with you, and Jay in particular has all the things that we have hammered out as the Eastern Wisconsin Mission Lifeline pilot project and the things that we have done, which we are happy to share. You can get in touch with Jay. Jay can get in touch with us. We can share anything that we've done. We're happy just to promote good care.
Good. Thank you, Dr. Rosenberg. I think, Jay, if you wouldn't mind providing that information to us, we can post it alongside the webcast that we're recording today.
Sure. You could post my email, and anybody interested can send my email to Valders, and I'll get them all the information.
All right. Sounds very good. You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Our program is live. We surely invite your questions or comments. If you do have a question, please feel free to press number one on your keypad if you're listening over the phone. If you would like to email a question, Patrick is monitoring our email inbox. The email is emslive@paw.us. Again, that's emslive@paw.us. Our program continues after we take this brief break.
Hi, this is Joe Cavelli. For nearly 10 years, I used a LADtech scheduling tool for my EMT shifts. Having had this personal experience, I'd like to share how easy it was to submit my work availability to management and be assigned shifts. It was also easy to pick up open shifts or trade with others. I could even view my work schedule for the month, week, or day and know who else I was working with well ahead of that first 911 call. Best of all, I could access my schedule and all the great features offered by LADtech right on my smartphone, tablet, or computer. Are you using the grease board or paper handouts yet for your work schedules? If so, that is a thing of the past. You'll discover, too, that LADtech is more than just a scheduling tool. It offers many other great features as well. To learn more about LADtech's features or to sign up for a free trial version, visit LADtech.com. That's LADtech.com. Online employee scheduling and workforce management is much easier, faster, and better with LADtech.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Patrick Ryan. We're talking about STEMI medication and drug therapy with handling a STEMI patient. We have on with us Dr. Mike Rosenberg. He's the medical director for cardiovascular services at Holy Family Memorial Hospital in Manitowoc, Jay Stewart with Valders Ambulance, Dana Seckler with Baraboo District Ambulance, Patrick Ryan with Ryan Brothers in Madison is also with us. We've talked about STEMI. We've talked about medication and therapy. We have about 5 minutes left with today's program. Are there some closing thoughts, Dr. Rosenberg, that you'd like to offer regarding this? As ambulance services should be continuing to evaluate their delivery of patient care, and specifically with STEMI, what recommendations would you have?
Well, I think the EMS services that I interact with, and we have probably 6 or 7 different agencies that we work with, do a phenomenal job. We provide ongoing education, and people should hopefully ask for that from their medical direction. We really consider them our partners because we can't do what we do without them, and we empower them. So there's really a partnership. Our EMS staff come into the cath lab. Oftentimes they watch the cases if they have the ability to do that. People who understand the entire process and who feel as if they have ownership in it and are recognized for their accomplishments do a much better job. And we've been very fortunate in that regard. The other thing that I would just like to say is that Wisconsin is an at-will state. I come from Illinois, where the rules were a bit more rigid. You had to go to the closest hospital that provided the care. And in this case, of course, STEMI care, we sometimes see political or financial inducements to take a patient to the brother or sister hospital of a hub-and-spoke system. And I'm not going to name names, but I think probably many of you have seen this happen. And that doesn't happen in many other states. It unfortunately does happen in Wisconsin. I think we trust our EMS partners to know when patients are sick enough that they may very well not make that 40-minute trip. They should not go where their insurance suggests that they go because it'll be paid for regardless. They should go where the medicine is best and where the outcomes should work to the patient's advantage. And sometimes that means bucking medical direction. We don't mean for that to be done in a nasty way, but if you see somebody with an acute anterior MI who appears to be either in florid heart failure or going into impending shock, I wouldn't encourage you to say, yes, we're going to go to that hospital that's 40 minutes away because either medical direction says it's the hub-and-spoke model for them or the patient says my insurance is with X organization. You know, dig your feet in. If you think it's medically right, you'll be supported by somebody. I know we support our EMS people when they make those kinds of recommendations.
STEMI is such a time-sensitive action or corrective action that's required, and you pointed to some things with 8-minute and 20-minute turnaround times and things like that and the various awards that your organization has received. We very much appreciate your comments this morning and wish you continued success with your program. And we appreciate Jay Stuhr bringing to attention the program that you've developed over at Holy Family Memorial Hospital. So thank you, Dr. Rosenberg, for sharing your comments this morning. Jay, did you have any closing comments as we wrap things up?
No, I think the most important thing is, and like we talked about prior, and I know Dana shares the same thing, is really patient care is what is really the most important and the main EMS concern. So, you know, fighting, pushing it back against some of the political views and the financial views of some of the hospitals that might want to take patients, say, to, like Dr. Rosenberg said, a facility that's 40 miles away because it's a sister hospital. As far as free hospital EMS, we have to be the ones to kind of take a stand and do what's best for the patient, as long as obviously the patient agrees. But rather than affiliations, we need to look at doing what's truly best for the patient, and that's what we should be there for.
Very good. Thank you, Jay. I know when I was involved in EMS at the local level, you know, there were two numbers that we could often quote as far as our response time to a 911 call. So that was from the time of the page to getting on scene. And the other number we could frequently quote is STEMI to balloon time. It seemed like an EMS, those were the two dynamics that you always heard about. So it's a very, very important thing. Dana, how about you as far as comments regarding this? Anything in closing?
Well, I certainly want to commend Dr. Rosenberg and Jay and those that are up in that area that have legitimately and proactively made the right decision. That this is, you know, time is muscle. This is about excellent patient care, and you know they're the advocates for those patients. I'm looking forward to talking, with both of them in the future. I'd like to grab some of the examples that they have to bring to
our facilities. I think that the majority of people that we're working with do want to do good patient care. I mean, I believe that that's what's in the heart of cardiologists, physicians, and paramedics. We just need to work through the system. I'm agreeing with you. We've all probably had our discussions with medical direction, and we've had our disagreements, and we've survived those encounters. I will say, when you get a first year or second year paramedic who's just learning the ropes, that doesn't want to rock the boat or create waves, it's a very difficult place to be to say, I'm trying to advocate for excellent patient care, but here I am arguing with a physician or even a cardiologist who probably has a few more years of experience behind me. And we've all been there, and just saying it's a tough place to be. So as long as we're doing it for the right reasons and good patient care, I understand that. But I also want to put the reality touch in there that, you know, you end up getting a phone call from the medical director to the service director going, we need to talk. And I can always defend it as long as it's for the best patient care that can be out there. That's why I'm looking forward to talking with Jay some more in the future and what he's doing. And I hope to we'll continue to work with our local resources on trying to get everybody on one page, hopefully picking one medication to use. And at the end of the day, that will be what's best for the patient.
Very good, Dana. Thank you very much. Dr. Rosenberg and Jay, thank you as well for joining the program this morning and sharing your perspective and information. Dr. Rosenberg, please accept our congratulations to you and your system in its recent acknowledgement of awards, and notably the conference that you spoke at a couple weeks ago. Thank you very much for sharing your passion this morning with us. I'd like to send a special shout out to Dion Eske. Dion is our Wisconsin representative for Stars of Life. She was one of 26 Wisconsin stars presented with the honors and awards this past September in Green Bay. This is an event that is sponsored by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. Well, Dion was selected from the group of 26 to represent Wisconsin at the National Stars of Life in Washington, D.C. That is happening as we speak yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I believe the honors and awards in dinner program is this evening. She is one of 103 stars being recognized nationally by the American Ambulance Association. So a special shout out to Dion Eske and her family, who are in Washington, D.C. as we speak. Patrick, anything else in closing as we wrap up today's broadcast?
No, it's just really great to hear the cooperation between the hospital, the system at large, and EMS. I think in too many places around around the state, there's not that cohesion, and I think ultimately who is affected is the patient. So it's really great to hear that collaboration happening, and really something that we all could aspire to have happen in our local areas.
Absolutely, yes, that is for sure. It was a good conversation, good perspective, good points of view. I'd like to remind our listening audience, the next EMS Live program is Tuesday, April 26th, starting at 9 a.m., We'll be joined by attorney Wendy Ahrens. Wendy is with the law firm Godfrey & Kahn in Madison. She and attorney Thomas Shorter, who represents the Association on Healthcare Matters, have recently authored an article regarding anti-kickback, specifically directed at ambulance services with anti-kickback. So something that we will be chatting about further on Tuesday, April 26th. EMS Live in Wisconsin is streamed live over the phone and internet the second and fourth Tuesday every month. Today's program was recorded and will be available shortly on the association's website at paaw.us. Just look for it in the archive section. Thank you very much for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you with us, and we look forward to being back on Tuesday, April 26th. Have a good day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.